Hello and welcome back. It's episode 107 of the Chaos Ball Podcast, the first official episode of the 2025 season. And I just flailed my arms back and forth when I said that. You can't see it. Hello. Welcome. The season has started. We're a week and change in. And before I dive in, which, you know, I've said the past 2 years, I've said this. I don't talk a whole lot about the actual ball being played in April. I will here and there, for sure. Stats, meh. I say them if they're fun. April is, it's such a weird time for baseball. Because you gotta wait to really make a lot of opinions. I mean, you don't have to. People throw out opinions at all times in our modern media, sports media landscape. Takes are flying constantly, no matter how many games in the season we are. But it's like a guy can raise his OPS 500 points in a weekend series. Honestly, more than that this early on. So I feel like you've got to wait until it's like close to the end of April to where two home runs in a ball game doesn't bump a guy slugging up from 350 to 600, you know? It's because, like, Eugenio Suarez's start to the year, which has been amazing to watch. I'm not even angry about it anymore. I'm just glad he's thriving in the desert. Got, like, elite, like, really good hitters, like him, have stretches like that all season. But that stretch comes at the beginning of the year, so it will live in everyone's mind for the rest of the season. Like, I think for a lot of casual fans, no matter what happens with his year, he's had a really good year at the plate already. And it's done. His 2025 has been good at the plate for the rest of the season with how he started the year. And that any stretch like that could come for any hitter, June, July, or whatever. And then the guy starts, you know, first 2 weeks of the season with four hits total. That also happens to a lot of hitters, but if it happens in the middle of the season, people forget about it. But if it happens at the start of the season, oh, now that guy stinks for all of 2025. It's fun. It's fun time in baseball seeing the stats go wee. But before I get into the actual 2025 stuff that's happened this season, which it's been a real narrative filled few first series is, I'd say. Johnny Cueto's 2014 season, I don't think it's talked about enough. I was just perusing, I mean, as I'm one to do, I am perusing Baseball Reference in my boredom, and I knew that Johnny Cueto was an awesome pitcher. I love Johnny Cueto. I loved watching Johnny Cueto. I don't think I was entirely familiar with just how good his 2014 was, and I think it's not talked about enough because he didn't win the Cy Young, because Kershaw might have had the greatest pitching season of the modern era in 2014, which it's tough for Cueto, because most other years, he probably wins that Cy Young, I'd say. But it fell in the, like, that, like, seven-year peak where Kershaw, like, he had the two straight Cy Young seasons that were, like, again, those were two of the best seasons we've ever seen from a starting pitcher in the history of baseball. He won the MVP in 2014, too, so, like, Cueto wasn't going to win. You know, it would have been funny if Cueto won the Cy Young and Kershaw won the MVP. But no, so I feel like it goes a little bit not talked about. And maybe that's my fault. Maybe I'm not in the right circles. They're talking about Johnny Cueto's 2014. He led the league in innings, strikeouts, and hits per nine. In Cincinnati, he put up a 2.25 ERA. And 243 and two-thirds innings. That is a Felix Hernandez type year. Why is 2014 important to me as well? Because Felix Hernandez should have won the Cy Young over Corey Kluber that year. I understand. There's arguments for Kluber. Felix deserved the Cy Young. Felix should have two. All I'm saying, Felix should have two Cy Youngs. It would make his Hall of Fame candidacy a little bit simpler if he was given the 2014 Cy Young, as he should have. I'm biased, but whatever. He should have won that. But Johnny Cueto, man, I mean, that's just a crazy year. I wrote that in my notes because I was like, that is an insane year to do. That's crazy to do in Cincinnati. I'm not going to sit here and say he should have won the Cy Young over Clayton Kershaw. I mean, he shouldn't. Again, if you haven't looked at Kershaw's peak from, like, what? What's his peak? 2010 to 2016? More or less. Where he was Cy Young, top two finisher for seven straight years, probably. Yeah, Cueto to do that at Cincinnati is insane. Good thing, or a good strategy, to not giving up a lot of runs and getting ballparked in Cincinnati is to just simply not give up hits and strike out a lot of guys, and that's what he did. But that has nothing to do with the 2025 season so far. That has nothing to do with the Torpedo Bats, but I just wanted to say, shout out to Johnny Cueto. Salute to you, my man. You will be on a Hall of Fame ballot. I don't think you're a Hall of Famer. I think Cueto is a classic Hall of Very Good guy. Hall of Great player, I'd say, even. But not a Hall of Famer. But salute to you, Johnny Cueto. Now, I guess I'll talk about 2025. The Torpedo Bats. The Dodgers are going to win 161 games. They're going to lose one. The Braves are going to lose 161 games. There's two Luis Castillos currently on the Mariners' big league roster as I'm speaking, which is probably going to change soon. What should I start with? I mean, the Torpedo, but everyone's talked about the Torpedo Bats. I fired some tweets off about these. I mentioned this like approximately 6 minutes ago. This media landscape we're in modern sports, where the information is disseminated so quickly, it gets to our eyes and our brains so quickly. You don't even need to seek it out. If you follow sports or baseball in any capacity, the algorithm just throws it at you. You don't even have to look. You can just sit there, mindless, and Torpedo Bats, Torpedo Bats, Torpedo Bats. That's all everyone talked about that first series. It was like the perfect storm of baseball narrative. Because any other team is using these, it doesn't get talked about nearly as much as the Yankees. These were used in spring training. Some of these bats, I think that they were dabbled. Some guys dabbled in using them last season. I think Giancarlo Stanton used them in the playoffs last season. But all it took was opening day weekend at Yankee Stadium, which is a Little League ballpark, and for the Brewers to trot out a bunch of guys throwing 91-mile-an-hour fastballs in the middle of the plate, for everyone to lose their minds. Yeah, like, the Yankees hit a lot of home runs. Nestor Cortes gave up three in a row to start the game, which was upsetting for him. It was the perfect storm. The Brewers pitching staff is beat the hell up right now. And if you watch that series, which I did, those pitches were garbage. Most of those pitches were just cookies. And again, it's a Little League ballpark. Home runs are so easy there. The Yankees have pretty good hitters. You know, like Anthony Volpe in year three, as like, what is he, 22 years old? Hitting with a little bit more pop. I don't know if you can just attribute that to his bat. What if he has just made improvements at the plate because he's 22? Aaron Judge hit 15 home runs this past weekend too. Like, not half of them were Aaron Judge, but like five of them were out of the 14 they hit. He's not using the Torpedo Bat. This It was just people were losing their goddamn heads over these bats. I'm interested in them. I'm more interested in tracking what the ball is doing right now. The ball is jumping off the bat. I am suspect that they juiced the ball not to the 2018, 2019 degree, but we might be getting a little juice. It might be just because the weather's warmer, because of unpredictable climate conditions we find ourselves in at the hands of corporations ruining the planet. But these bats, I don't think, are just launching these balls over the fence. Now, they might help. They might help certain guys. They might help everyone. I don't know. I've read a lot. I've listened to a lot about these bats. And what I can say is the logic is sound, and I can't believe that we didn't do this sooner. Like, how did someone not already do this? Is my question. It's so, like, baseball has gotten, like with a lot of other sports, but baseball, I feel like, has led the way in, like, analytics and sabermetrics, you could call it, stats, whatever. Nerds, like old heads and Jonathan Lucroy's and Eric Hosmer's of the world will say, oh, the stats are ruining the game. These guys are all pussies playing baseball now, worrying about their launch angles and velocity. Just go out there and hit, man. But we've gotten to a point where it is a lot, but it's still is a child's game. And this bat thing is the most caveman brain invention ever. It's like, what if we made the part where a lot of guys hit the ball fatter, you know? It's crazy concept. I mean, wiffle ball bats, the wiffle ball bat technology has already accomplished this tenfold, and they've been doing that for decades. Like, we had, growing up, we had a wiffle ball bat that was skinny that you'd have to kind of use in, like, regulation, I say, when you're actually playing a game. But then we also had the big, fat, barreled orange bat, whatever it was called. That was when I was a kid with my older brothers, because they were better at baseball than me. I would hit with that thing, and I would crank dingers with that thing. I can't believe no one's done this. Like, I feel like teams know the rules. I feel like there's front office people around the game who read the rule book and should have done something sooner. Like, this should have been an immediate response to sticky stuff, I think. Like, the balls were juiced, and the, like, amount of torque you needed to hit a home run was definitely a little bit less. And then the MLB got rid of that. Oh, I said the MLB. My bad. MLB got rid of that. When, like, and then sticky stuff, and they got rid of that. How were the barrels not, how was the barrels not an immediate response to the pitching in the past few years getting so, so good? Like, the technology and optimization of players has definitely improved everyone's ability, but is absolutely, the scales are tipped in the pitcher's way, right? So just making the barrel bigger is not a crazy idea. Simple idea, crazy that no one's done it before. And it is legal. Yankees fans overnight became bat experts, which was very funny to see. From a very funny fan base to poke fun at, because they feel so sensitive at all times about everything. It was so funny to see them all become experts in bat technology and what the Major League Baseball rule book says. These bats are legal. No matter what people say, they're legal. And I'm just intrigued to see if they actually do work. We're going to get a big sample size this season from these bats. A lot of the Yankees are using them. A lot of other guys were using them on opening day weekend. It just, they weren't hitting a million home runs like the Yankees. So again, it wasn't this perfect storm of a narrative to say like, oh, the Yankees are cheating with these new bats. I'm just excited to see if it actually works. Because if these work, like if this... People talk about club fitting for golf a lot. I've heard that. I've read that and heard that both all week of like, we're getting there with pitching where you can analyze a pitcher's everything and tweak his grips and his release and everything to optimize how that guy throws pitches. Like it's not like pitching is so personalized now. Like this works best for you. Throw that. Hitting, you can kind of do that with swings, but it's like, can we make bats that are very specifically for hitters based on how they hit? And this is where Volpe, like the Volpe conversation came into play, where it was like the Yankees analytics department realized Volpe was hitting the baseballs not necessarily where a lot of other barrels were, but on more of the nameplate of the bat, like farther closer to his hands. And so that's why, so the barrel is now closer to his hands, and it's, I mean, short, small sample size, it's, he's been hitting well to start the year. It's not going to work for everyone, but I'm really intrigued to see as we get more and more of a sample size, if this does genuinely like tick up barrel rates across the league, and if we can measure that effectively. Because if so, I'm all for them. They should not be banned. If it's the same weight specifications and length and whatever, well, I actually don't think there is. I think you can have as long as a bat as you want. But like it fits all the specifications. I don't think it should be banned. If this makes offense tick up, I'm all for it. This is a response to how good the pitching's got. And frankly, we've needed something like this without MLB having to intervene in the freaking shadows and juice the baseballs. This was another thing that was like so infuriating about these bats is, no matter how many times you could say, yeah, this is legal, fans aren't trusting MLB that even if something's legal, it's not a little nefarious. They have not earned the benefit of the doubt with all of the base, with the juice balls, and then now how we handle sticky stuff. It's so subjective. MLB has not earned the benefit of the doubt when we say, oh, it's legal, but like, what's MLB doing behind the scenes with this? How, like, it's legal, but what are they, you know, what are their motives? Do we trust them? They just haven't earned that right. And especially with the baseballs, I'd say. But is this going to work for some guys and not for others? Maybe. Like, Aaron Judge was like, why would I do that? Yeah, fair. Which is also really funny. It was like the spiciest thing I've ever heard Aaron Judge say, because he's insanely boring. Like, he's the captain of the Yankees. He has to be like a marble slab that just socks dingers, which is what he is, and say nothing. He was like, why would I use those bats? Well, my bat's working for me. Which, true. Go off, dude. Absolutely. You were correct. Why would you need that? You were the best hitter on the planet. You don't need that. That's also just like a kind of a shot at all of his teammates using them. Just like, nah, my teammates, those guys, those suckers, yeah, they need them. Me, nah, not me, not myself. We'll see. I'm excited if this actually takes up offense and to see more guys use them, and if everyone's going to use them, because it is kind of a blanket. Like, yeah, your barrel rate's going to tick up no matter what kind of hitter you are, half percentage point. Like, that would be pretty significant. So looking forward to the rest of the year with these bats, just to see if they actually work. I'm more interested in what the balls are doing right now. You know what I'm saying? But pitchers will respond to this. Let's say it's some groundbreaking research comes out. Middle of the season. Everyone's using these bats now, no matter who you are. The bat makers, like Marucci, whatever. Oh, that's another thing. The bat, it's like, this isn't a proprietary Yankees thing. Guy at the Yankees thought of this, I think. But all these bat manufacturers can't make specialized bats for teams. Like, any team can now order these from, what, Marucci Invictus? That's the other thing. But let's say they've gotten really good. They've gotten, like, even better middle of the season at making bats. Like, there's now torpedo bats that are even more optimized than what we saw opening day weekend. What is the pitcher's response? Like, pitchers will respond to this. Does this mean that Now, catchers know who in each lineup is using a torpedo bat. Will those guys see a lot more balls on the outside of the plate? Because seemingly, right, if the barrel is closer to the hands, hitting the ball on the outside of the, on like the end of the bat is now even worse than it was before. It's not, it wasn't good before. It's like you don't want to hit the, you don't want to hit the ball on the end of the bat regardless. But now let's say it's even worse. You, it's even weaker because there's less barrel there. Like, will Anthony Volpe just be getting from right-handed pitchers like cutters, sliders, sweepers, fastballs? He won't see anything running arm side from a right-handed pitcher. Right? I feel like there's going to be an adjustment here if these bats are really actually producing some meaningful offensive numbers. So we'll see. I'm excited for the Mariners to use them. I say I'm excited just to see if they actually take up offense. I'm excited for Mariners hitters to use them. I just want to see something. What else is going on at baseball? Again, the Dodgers are going to win all of the games. Man, I've watched a lot of Dodgers baseball start this year. Not only because they play at optimal times for me to watch, but also I live in LA County and I can just turn the TV on. And they're right there. They're really good. I'll say it. They're really good at baseball. It's a shame they're so good. I can't actually enjoy how good they are because they're ruining the sport because they've bought all of the best players. So, you know, it's a real shame this season. You can basically cancel it. You know, they've ruined the game, so I can't actually enjoy the rest of the season. They're just too good. I think there's some people that think like that, man, which is really lame. I think the Cespedes Family Barbecue fellas put it the best. I forget which one of them said it. I think it was Jordan. Like, they hope the Yankees, or not the Yankees, oh my God. See, I said the Yankees because they're now the Yankees. Hope the Dodgers are just firing on all cylinders heading into the playoffs. Like, I hope they win. Fuck it, like, they break the Mariners 116 win record going into the postseason. They have a full strength pitching staff. Mookie is no longer 100 pounds. Freddie Freeman hasn't slipped in a shower in months leading up to the postseason. Shohei Ohtani is pitching again. Rookie Sasaki's figured some things out. The bullpen is looking good. Andy Páez is a really good outfielder, which I think he's going to be. And then they lose in the, like, imagine if they lose in the postseason then. Like, having a team like the Dodgers is good. It is good. It's a Death Star to root against. Like, that's part of what, like, the teams that don't make the World Series, or that don't even make the playoffs. So, like, the Mariners, we're pretty used to not making the postseason. What do you do when you watch the postseason? Me, I do like enjoying all of the baseball. I like watching baseball. I like watching good baseball teams. Postseason baseball is really fun to watch when you're not, you don't have a stake in any of the teams. But when there's a team this good, I even remember when I was young and the Yankees, it was 2010, 2011. It was the Bronx Bomber Yankees. You rooted against the Yankees. The Astros too. Everyone rooted against them after the banging scheme. That added an extra layer of hate, but they were also really good every single postseason, every single season after that, and so they were fun to root against. Having a really good team to root against is great for the sport of baseball, because more often than not, that team does lose in the postseason. The Dodgers have a really good shot at being the first repeat champs since the Yankees at the turn of the century. They have a really good shot of winning three in a row like those same Yankees. And in the history of baseball, that has not been done very many times. And we've seen, especially in like this era of modern baseball, again, it hasn't happened since I was born at the turn of the century. Like, it's great to root against a team like that. So it's been awesome. And from an American League standpoint, I don't really care that much about the Dodgers. Like, we might play them in the middle of the season. They're not in my division. They're not in my league. The only chance we play them in the playoffs is the World Series. And frankly, if the Mariners are playing the Dodgers in the 2025 World Series, I am happy to be there. I will root against them, obviously. Obviously. But I'd be happy to be there. So I'm looking forward to the postseason already, because we're going to, everyone in the country is going to be rooting against the Dodgers, which is really fun. The Braves stink, so that's fun. I don't want to dwell on that. It's the curse of Jared Kelnick. That's what it is. The Mariners just started Luis Castillo the other day in San Francisco, playing the future 2025 World Series champions, the San Francisco Giants. Didn't go great. Could have went worse, I guess. Didn't go good at all. It was funny for the bit that Luis F. Castillo started the game right after Luis M. Castillo. But let's get serious for a second. These games without George Kirby have been quite bad. There's only been two of them, and they've been awful. Like, I feel like we're going to see Jonathan Diaz next, and he's not good. You know? Why is the other Luis Castillo starting a baseball game? Frankly, like, Emerson Hancock had an absolute howler of a debut for his season. I don't see the point in sending him down to start Luis F. Castillo. Honestly. Like, at least with Hancock, there's still, like, he was a former top pick, you know. There's something there. I gave you a shred of optimism at the start of the season. Like, he was decent in September last year. Despite getting shit on, sometimes pitchers get pooped all over in a start and then go out next week and they look fine. I don't see the point in immediately sending Hancock down for Luis F. Castillo, frankly. If it was Logan Evans, why the hell not? Like, why are they not just calling up Logan Evans right now? I don't even care if he's not ready. He's going to do more, or at least show you something, than Luis Castillo or, like, Jonathan Evans. It's times like this I miss the man. I miss Darren McCaughan, you know? Just baffling to me why he was starting a baseball game. If Jerry DePoto just did that for the bit, honestly, respect the hell out of that. But they just played the most excruciating. That was a really entertaining game of baseball. Went to the 12th inning. Umpire really squeezed him in the 12th. Carlos Vargas honestly has looked much better than I thought, and really drew the short end of the stick and got the loss in that game last night, even though that was not really 100% on him. He's honestly looked pretty good. I don't know. I told you I was worried about the pitching depth. I told you I was worried about it. Even though I gave you that little bit to be optimistic about with Emerson Hancock, which he might just be bad. I don't think we've seen the last of him. He might be bad. I'm still quite worried about the pitching depth, because it doesn't sound like Kirby's going to be back until the latter half of April, if that, probably early May, because I don't think they're going to rush him. I think we're going to see Logan Evans. I think we're going to have to see Logan Evans. And then after Logan Evans, who is it? It's Hancock, Luis F. Castillo, Jonathan Diaz. It's not good. And the brutal part of that game yesterday was the offense just cooked. Best offensive game of the year by far. Like, it was good plate appearances, barrel on the ball. Julio hit a really impressive oppo home run. Jorge Polanco's crushing the ball. He would have had a splash hit yesterday if it wasn't for a microphone on one of the flagpoles out there. Like, everyone looked really good. Well, I shouldn't say everyone, but the offense on the whole looked really good. And they still got the loss. It's games like that you can't get the loss, because it's not often your offense is going to pick up the pitching staff like they did. So losing like that is excruciating. I really wish they won the Luis F. Castillo start. I don't think we'll see him again this season. I hope not. It's not like he was terrible. He clearly is not good enough to start games for a team that wants to win. I don't know what they do from here. They also have handled the pitching staff a little odd this year. Like, the only reason they started Luis Castillo here is to give everyone an extra rest, which, like, I'm fine with. But again, why him of all people? I just don't know. I have a theory. I have a theory that the Mariners' offense needs the pitching to stink in order to, like, score a lot of runs. You know, like, the pitching stinks, and then you kind of have to light a fire under yourself to be like, yeah, we're going to claw back into this game. We're going to pick up our pitching staff, which often picks us up, and we're going to score a lot of runs to get back in this ball game, and hopefully the bullpen can hold on for us to win. But then when the pitching is great, the offense just gets complacent, sits on their hands. You know, the pitching's great, which it often is, and it's like, you know, we're fine. We only need to score like 3 runs and we'll probably end up winning this, and stress out every single fan for 9 innings because we're winning by 1 or 2 the entire time. How can we solve that? How can we trick the offense into thinking the pitching has been terrible? How could we do that? I don't think we could do that. That would be pretty difficult. I think generally guys in the dugout pay attention to when runs are scored, or even when they're in the field, you can pay attention to if runs are scored or not. So I don't know. Maybe it's that Dan Wilson needs to just put on the whiteboard or the bulletin board. We're going into every game. Top of the first, we're down 5-0 already, boys. You know, I think it's up to him to inspire. He hasn't been particularly inspiring, just to segue into Dan Wilson, a little manager talk, which I hate doing. I don't like doing manager talk because I've said this a lot. I like Scott Servais. The firing made sense to me. I didn't disagree with it. I don't really think managers matter a whole lot in baseball these days. That's not a novel take, not a novel take on this podcast. I've said that many times. But Dan Wilson, there's been a couple times where I'm not even like super mad. It just feels like it's kind of a growing pain thing, like he's never managed before. And it reminds me that this team hired him straight up with no managerial experience last season after they fired their manager of, what, 9 years? No interim. They just hired him straight up. I still can't believe they did that. That's one of the weirdest things DePoto's ever done. Like, teams don't do that, you know, unless Bruce Bochy is freaking available. No, Dan Wilson, it just feels like is he ever going to get ejected this season too? He seems too nice to get ejected, but he's kind of sat on his hands this year. Some of the bullpen usage is whatever. I don't like to dwell on the bullpen usage because, A, I think managing a bullpen is a lot harder than fans think it is. You know, like, it looks easy, but you're in the moment. You have to have a lot of information at you, like, how many pitches did this guy throw recently, which is not, like, novel. You also just have to kind of have a feel for things. I think there's less analytics that need to go into it. I think some of it's just feel. I don't think Dan Wilson has the feel yet. Some of it has been, like, he hasn't pinch hit in spots that he probably should have. Like, if you're going to have Donnie Barrels on the bench as a guy who's supposedly supposed to match lefties, put him in against a lefty at all times late in games when Rowdy Tellez is at the plate. I think that's what Dan Wilson lacks as a new manager, is just the feel. I think a lot of baseball is just gut feeling rather than thinking analytically. Like, you have to think critically when managing a bullpen, but I think some of it's just like, no, this guy just clearly doesn't have it. And I think the guy I'm warming up in the bullpen is an absolute dog in the brain and is just going to get the outs no matter what. So I think some of his feel, I think he's probably going to warm up to making decisions like that? I don't know. It's weird that he's the manager. It's weird that they didn't hire someone with more experience in a contention window. Maybe Dan Wilson's going to be an amazing manager for the Seattle Mariners. I just don't know. That's it for manager talk. Polanco has started the year off great. Just had a fourth kid, apparently, too, which is cool. Named him Josh Bell, which I did a double take listening to the broadcast yesterday. Full first name, Josh Bell. And I was like, this, like, after the baseball player? I was trying to think of the through line there. And I don't think Polanco and Josh Bell have ever played on the same team before. But no, it was just a full first name, which is actually kind of sick. Julio started off the year really well, hitting the ball really hard, lots of hits. Great center field. Randy also started off the year well, a lot of walks, you know, plenty of whiff, but that's him as a player hitting the ball really hard. The usage of Santos, Gregory Santos, I almost just said George Santos. The usage of Gregory Santos has been a little weird. I feel like they're just figuring out what to do with him. But you required him to be a 7th, 8th inning guy. And I think you just have to let him do that right now. If it goes poorly, then you figure it out. I think you have to let him be a stopper late in innings right now. But I like I talked about with Saucedo at the start of the year, that Santos gets a lot of ground balls, and ground balls to the left side of the infield are scaring me a little bit because Jorge Polanco's at third base. And Polanco, to start the year, like I said, at the plate's been great. It's like the flirting and harassment meme. Polanco at the plate, flirting. Love it. Looks comfortable, putting good swings on the ball, just looking great. Exquisite for the first few series. In the field, it's harassment. I can't believe they're playing him at third base. They're playing a non-third baseman at third base. The fielding has been fine. That was not the issue. And that was kind of one of the biggest reasons they moved him over there from second base is the range just wasn't looking like it was there for him. And you do kind of have to be a little rangy if you want to be a second baseman. Third base, you don't need a ton of range. Your range is a little bit more limited. So he's fine there. He's fielding baseballs. The throwing has been awful. And I don't know if you know this, but third base to first base is actually the farthest positional throwing in the infield. So not been good. It's not been good. And throwing from third base to first base is so difficult. I'm thinking of from my perspective, from just like an average person, insanely difficult throw. That is so much farther than you think it is. But for a Major League Baseball player, you need to be able to make that throw. He has had some garbo throws. And it's like that bounce off the ground to first base. Some of those are like all of these haven't looked purposeful. There is that throw when you're kind of deep in the hole and you do skip it once, and it's an easier throw to make and to handle by the first baseman. These have not been that. It's been like routine plays that he spikes into the ground. I don't think he's going to stick at third. Honestly, I think if he's hitting, there's always the option to DH him a little bit if he can respond to that. You know what the other option is? I think, what if he can play first base? You don't need a lot of range. Can he pick balls out of the dirt? Hopefully. Like, just play him at first. Fuck it. Play him at first. And Raley is a DH outfielder, backup first baseman. Third base, I think they're just going to have to call up Ben Williamson at some point this year, even if he doesn't hit, because it looks like he's going to be a really good defensive third baseman. And I think that could be very, very helpful for this team. I think it would pick up JP. I think it would pick up a lot of the pitching, particularly like Saucedo and Santos, these sinkers, especially Saucedo, who's a slow sinker guy. So I don't know what they do. If Polanco is hitting, that does get rid of some of the positional headache, because it would be easier to move him off third and put him somewhere else if he's hitting. If he's bad at both at some point, I don't know. I don't know what you do. It wouldn't be shocking. Like, this is kind of what they get. This is kind of what we get for how they've built this position player group, which has been a terrible way to build a position player group. But, you know, that first series couldn't have gone more Mariners-like. Split with the A's. Excruciating watches. Eat all four of the games. Looked not warm in Seattle. I think they barely sold out the first game and then the rest of the games over the weekend. I guarantee you the business operations and the ticket people internally were running around like heads cut off a chicken, you know, because it looked bad. They did not get a lot of people in that first weekend comparatively like to what they should be getting as a team that wants to contend and good. Like, they shouldn't. This, like, that is a decent message, I think, to ownership and to the front office. Now, if they don't think the anger of the fans is at a fever pitch, if they don't know that, then they're just insanely delusional. They should and probably do know that, but that was a good sign of where the fan base is at right now. But yeah, that first series with the A's couldn't have gone more like a Mariners series. It was just like pulling teeth. And they still split it. Thank God. If they lost that last game of the series, season would have been over. So, and I'm going to call it there because it is April 6th when this comes out. And it's April 6th. Like, come on. We just got to. There are more baseballs being played. The one thing is Julio does look phenomenal. He's already had almost as many extra base hits as he did all of April last season. He looks really good. Knock on wood. That can continue. He has all we've wanted from him is to start the year off like he hits in June. And so far, it's been great. It's been nice. But I will leave you at that. Go freaking Seattle Mariners and have a great rest of your week. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.